اللهم صل على
محمد وعلى فرجهم. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد. اللهم صل على محمد وعلى محمد وعلى أهل بيت الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين، لا سيما بقية الله في الأرضين، روحي وارواح العالمين له الفداء. رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي أمري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقه قولي. Dear brothers and sisters, inshallah, what we're going to try and discuss tonight will be the practical application of what we learned yesterday. We're reminded when we looked at the ayat of the Holy Quran and the hadith of the Ahlul Bayt, we were reminded about some of our beliefs about destiny, fate, divine decree. And we want to apply that to the Imam's return. We want to see how we can apply those principles of Islam in order to experience the good of this, the life of this world, but more importantly, to create a situation where our master returns. So, in Islam, one of the verses that we have that indicates that we do have free will and how important it is that we as a people, as a nation, want our imam to come back is this verse. It says, إِنَّ اللَّهَ لَا يُغَيِّرُ مَا بِقَوْمٍ حَتَّى يُغَيِّرُ مَا بِأَنفُسِهِمْ. Allah won't change the situation of a people until they change themselves. Allah won't bless a certain group of people with the blessing of wilaya of the imam unless they change themselves. Or other verses that let us know that very different from pseudo-democracy, and that's what we have here, pseudo-democracy, where the role of the people is not real. There's corporations, there's centers of powers, there's kingmakers who decides who rules, and that person, when they come into power, they have to pay back those people who pay their bills. Very different in Islam, there's an actual role of the people in self-determination. These principles, one of the principles being the role of the people in having the right of self-determination, is an Islamic principle, but for us as believers, it's real. And when, inshallah, if Allah gives tawfiq, if we're able to make it to the Messiah, we'll see what happens when the people don't want it. Islam, and it's so real that the people, if they don't want it, then the burning of the house of the Lady Fatima will take place. It's that real. So there's a real role for the people. So we want to apply those principles and see how we can get them to help us. We only believe that we're as strong, our imam is as strong as we are. When God talks in the Holy Quran, He says, He is the one who وَالَّذِي أَيَّدَكَ بِنَصْرِهِ وَبِالْمُؤْمِنِينَ. God is the one who supported you, who strengthened you with divine help, وَبِالْمُؤْمِنِينَ, with the believers. So, keeping that in mind, there's some things that I want to share as reminders for myself first, but then also for you. By the way, this is important for us as believers who are practicing to keep in mind. There's some believers who unfortunately basically have this kind of a concept. Imam Hussein, alayhi salam, Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad, he died. Nobody will say this, but if you look at their lives, this is what you'll see. Imam Hussein died so that I can live the life of Yazid. Right? I come, I do matam, I do niyaz, right? Then after that, I'm free. There's no personal responsibility. There's no accountability. As soon as I step out of the majlis, I go and I live my life because I paid my dues. I did matam. I gave niyaz. I go to ziyara. Right? But the idea of Islam actually going into the hearts and souls of the believers, absolutely not. Islam is a ritual, dry, empty rituals that mean nothing. I come, I show my face, assalamu alaikum, wa alaikum assalam, and chai. You know. But the idea of the imam is waiting on me, I personally have to get my act together. Does my family practice Islam? This is a little sad, right? Some of you may have seen something like this. I'm going to talk about then what's our responsibility as practicing believers. Why is it so important that practicing believers know what their duty is and then do it? What happens is, you'd be surprised, sometimes in people's lives, there's not much Islam present. In reality, there's not much love of the deen present. You'd be surprised, sometimes when you look in the faces of the believer, even those who are sitting, not in our majlis, but in a majlis, you'll see in the faces of those who are participating, I'm forced to be here. I have to, I can't say no, so I'm here. But, and I give a connection with God, with the Imam. There's a lot of questions. I was in a camp. We did this camp in England. So in the camp in England, we'd have brothers who are not wearing the libas, not wearing the imam and qaba, and they would be sitting with the youth. One of the brothers asked some of the youth, these are practicing kids, kids coming from good family, going to an Islamic camp. They said, what question would you ask if you could just be open and frank with the Maulana? If you could talk to him, if you weren't afraid, what would you ask? And this was in England. This was about two or three summers ago. They're like, if I could ask, is there really even a hereafter? Like, we're thinking, oh, everybody understands the Quran, ayat, hadith. Right? Is there really even a hereafter? People are confused. They're not, okay. So now back to us. What happens is that in every society, you have two groups of people. You have some people who are what we call awam, other people who are what we call khawas. Awam, they have no idea what's going on. They just support whoever they say to support. They're cheering for this person. Everybody's cheering. Hey, Allahu Akbar, we're cheering for this. Death to this person, the same thing. No, there's no sense. There's no thinking. There's other people, though, who think. They're good guys or bad guys. They think. They're sitting, they're watching, analyzing, deciding what's right, what's wrong. When Karbala took place, even what happened to Amir al-Mu'mineen was the khawas, those who think, those who understand, those who have an idea, not just the awam. Those guys were content with the rule of batil. When the followers of haq are content with the rule of batil, that's when you have Karbala. That's when you have the burning of the house of the Lady Fatima. Society goes down, right? The awam are lucky. If the khawas are good, then maybe the awam will make it to paradise. Khawas, right? So I'm talking about for us, for practicing believers, what's important. Now, another thing to keep in mind is this. Because this stuff is very real. This isn't like, God forbid, none of us come here to be entertained. The time, for me, the time of each one of you believers, I have to answer, for how many people are even in our majlis? But on the day of judgment, then God says, well, for each one of these people, you wasted 45 minutes of their time. Right? I mean, it's a heavy response. For each one of you, you're coming here for the Lady Fatima, you wouldn't do this for your own mother necessarily, this much participation, right? So it's heavy responsibility. Now, next thing to keep in mind, when it comes to the coming of the Imam, there's a principle. Just let me get a little bit of help from you guys. How many of you guys remember this hadith? After the Prophet died, they tell us, irtadda an-nas. The people left the religion. People left the religion, right? Except for, right? Irtadda an-nas. So irtidad over here doesn't mean that the people weren't praying. That everybody immediately they stopped praying. Everybody kind of became a murtad in that way. No. When it came to some core principles of Islam, the people abandoned those. The most important one being the wali of the time. People abandoned it. Otherwise, they probably had hijab. They're probably making salat, right? So what happens is that sometimes you'll have people who are Muslims or Shias, but they're not really that useful to the cause. There's a principle we learn from the Holy Quran. When it comes, because we can be that group of people who see the Imam, or it can be a lot later. It depends on us. Let's look at the verse. So Surah Ma'idah, verse number 54. God says, Ya ayyuhalladhina amanu, O you who believe, Man yartadda minkum an dinihi. Irtidad. Remember that verse I said, the hadith was, Irtadda an-nas, right? Man yartadda minkum an dinihi. So whoever of you deserts his religion, then there's a rule that God says. He says, فَسَوْفَ يَعْتِ اللَّهُ Allah will bring a group of people, بِقَوْمٍ يُحِبُّهُمْ People who love Allah, and Allah loves them. People who are humble before the believers, mighty against the unbelievers. It continues more. يُجَاهِدُونَ فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ These people will do jihad in the way of Allah. They're not afraid of sacrifice. And more than that, this is the part that applies now for Islamophobia. There's a lot of Muslims who get intimidated by Islamophobia. I don't know how comfortable you guys are here. I'm in Dearborn. A lot of the time I'm spending is in Dearborn. So over there is a Shia community. You see hijabs everywhere. You go to the mall, right? So you don't really feel the pressure of those people who are living outside amongst non-Muslims, where people are saying things. And you're worried, like after these different terrorist events, you're actually worried when my wife goes out, if she's wearing the hijab, because some people, their wives don't wear the hijab. But people who are practicing Muslims, they're worried, okay, my wife, my daughter goes out, I'm worried about them facing the consequences. So for them, this last part of the verse, it says, وَلَا يَخَافُونَ لَوْمَةَ لَائِمْ These people, so what will happen if you abandon your religion? Allah will bring a group of people. What will those people be like? Allah loves them, they love him. They're willing to do sacrifice in his way, and what else? They're not afraid of the blame of a blamer. People condemning them, talking about them, right? It looks like Trump may be the Republican nominee, right? It might be. If you look at the last debate, it might be him, okay? Now, when your president's over there, and I'm not saying he's a president yet, you know, for Muslims who are going to even get scared of that. We don't need to be afraid, by the way. If he comes in, we'll do our taklif in one way. If it's not him, if it's another one of those tawaghit, then we'll handle our responsibility another way. We're not terrified. Don't let Trump get in. Just vote to save Islam. We panic. But when somebody can go on a public platform like that and be so racist, so full of hate, and nobody even say anything, for some people, this is intimidating. But the believers, how are they supposed to be? One of the things about the group of people who will bring back the Mahdi, that group of people who God will bring, is they're not afraid of the words of people. People are going to go over and make statements and stuff like that. Absolutely not afraid. Now, for us, the other thing that we have to keep in mind is, so that's one principle. The idea that Allah, it can be us, it can be somebody else. Next one. If we think less of our abilities, let's say there's a group of believers who don't really believe in themselves. Really, like some, it might be in the hearts of some. When you talk about the coming of the Imam, really it could be that soon? Really? Or even more than that. Some people, when it comes to personal sins, they're committing certain sins, they're living a life which is far from God. When you talk to them about coming back to God, with some people, they don't even believe it in themselves. They don't believe in their capacities and their capabilities. Not believing in our capabilities, not thinking we can be the people who actually bring back the Imam, that's ingratitude to Allah's blessings. Not believing in myself with the permission of Allah, not the selfish Western way of confidence, but believing in myself and my abilities because of Allah, Allah's grace, Allah's mercy. Not believing that is ingratitude. So, if we're like that, we actually don't need numbers. We don't need to have amazing numbers that will overwhelm the enemies. Look at our strategy, what we learned from the ahadith of the Ahlul Bayt. In order for the Imam to return, this is your ahadith, you may have heard them already. The Imam says that knowledge will spread from Qum to the rest of the world. He says, until there is no one who's uneducated about the religion, not that everybody has to become Muslim. We don't think before the Imam comes back, everybody has to become Muslim. They just have to be exposed to Islam. The words of the hadith say that no one will be mustadhaf in deen, uninformed about the religion. One of our jobs, the important roles that we have, is to be open about our faith and to talk about it. The opposite of what the enemy wants us to do. Instead of hiding our faith, to be open about it and to explain. So if we do that, we don't actually need numbers. What the Imam explains to us. This is from Ali alayhi salam. What the Imam explains to us is this. He says that when God saw that we were patient and truthful, when God saw from the believers, we don't actually need numbers. When God saw that we were patient and truthful, God can do miracles. What did God do? Anzala bi'aduwin al-kabd. God made defeat come down on our enemies. Wa anzalna alayna nasr. God made us victorious. We don't actually need to have superior numbers. You know, in the Battle of Badr, how many of us were there? In the Battle of Badr? 313 versus an army of almost 1,000. If you look in the Battle of Ahzab, they had 10,000 people. How many of the believers? We like those numbers, those odds. The idea that they have more, that's not a problem. What's more important is us getting our act together, making sure we're doing what God wants us to do. Now, because I have a little bit more time here than I did in that previous center, I'd like to see how this applies, these principles, the idea of the return of the Imam, of actually practicing Islam. How does that apply to us? How does that apply to our practical lives? How will that apply to the return of the Imam and even this being an election year? This is for the Hawass, though. For the Hawass, if they decide to vote this year, what will happen? How they, right? Don't worry, there's going to be a lot of Muslims who are going to vote. They have no idea. They're over there. Trump's going to, you know, he's going to get us. He's a monster, right? He's Bush on crack. I'm going to vote. Right? Not those guys. I'm talking about real Muslims. The people who, not, those guys are Muslims too. They're just naive. They don't know. They have no idea. But for the believers who know, who are like, this is serious, this is real, for them, are they going to vote or not? Right? So we want to see, how do these principles apply to us? Real Islam, how does it apply right now? So, now, one of the things that I'd like to do, and this is something that, inshallah, we can keep in mind. Whenever an Islamic principle is explained to us, whenever we're learning about Islam, we always want to keep the big picture in mind. What happens? Sometimes Islam can be delivered to us, but it'll be given to us as a disservice. What do you mean? For instance, let's say I'm talking about Salah, but I don't explain for you, or you're not keeping in mind, Islam as a big picture, how does my prayer and my personal life relate to the return of the Imam of the time? What do you mean? One of the dangers that we have right now within practicing Shias, well, practicing, I can, we have two kinds of, we have two other currents that are happening within the Shia community. One of the currents is secular Shia Islam. Secular Shia Islam. So with secular Shia Islam, I may even pray, I may even fast, but God doesn't rule every area of my life. Right? When I go to work, I get introduced sometimes to brothers, right? I hope it's not happening on the sister's side. But I go over to the brother. So we're playing basketball. Right? We're going to the brother, we're playing basketball. So I'm thinking, oh, you know, Muslim, we're all Shia, we're going there, you know, Shia, he's coming to the thing. So, what's your name? Mo? Oh, Brother Mo. That's his name, right? So, these kind of, what happens? Those people who, Islam is not really part of my life. Islam outside, I'm another character. You see me outside. This is so terrible. I was in Sweden. Sorry, it's the last present night. I was in Sweden, right? And we had, I'm not going to mention where these brothers were from. They were from a certain community, right? But there she is. A singer had come on the same night, a non-Muslim, a Shia singer. They said, we saw so many people at the masjid, like people who should have been there doing the Sina Zani. He said, at the masjid, you were over there, you know, so, oh, at the concert, right? Other Shias left the masjid. Like, just completely, one side of my life is one way, outside I am a different animal. God forbid and God protect us from that. Anyhow, what was the point I was making? The idea that if we learn an Islamic concept, so there, one of the problems was secular Islam. The other one is Shia Islam, which is traditional, ritualistic, backwards, sectarian Shia Islam. I don't understand Urdu, but I go to sometimes majalis, the ones that are, I'm giving the lecture, so I'm doing my own part, right? But I don't understand Urdu, but I listen to the other sheikh or sayyid who's listening. Some of the majalis are a little spicy, right? And then the people, wah, 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 wah. You can tell when it's going wrong, usually, right? Like, believe me, brothers, I don't know, how many of you know me? I used to be Sunni, right? I became Shia. And the thing is that for a lot of us Shias, we don't have the idea of tabligh. We think it's like a Sunni thing. Dawah, we're here in our own center. You know, we forget about the world. We go and we do our thing, right? So the way that they talk about the first Khalifa, the second Khalifa, and the way that it's spicy, and the wah, 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 and the little comments. If a Sunni was there, my God. Tabligh, maybe the opposite of tabligh. Opposite of tabligh. God protect us. Anyhow, so those are the two extremes. Now, what happens with regular Islam? With regular Islam, if the way I'm explaining Salat, for instance, or other practical laws of Islam, is not connecting them with the bigger scheme of things, I don't see how my fasting is connected to the Imam of the time and the return. I don't see how this minor ruling in Islam, I don't see, how does that mean the wilayah of God on the earth? If I don't see that, that kind of Islam is not very helpful to the cause. If I can see the connection between the acts that I'm doing and my personal life and the return of the Imam, each little step that I'm taking, in reality, the earth is trembling beneath my feet. I'm doing this for the coming of the Imam. Yes, it's a minor rule in Islam. Yes, it's hijab for me, for instance. Some people, they know that the hijab, when I'm wearing hijab, that's me saying, Labbaika ta Fatima. Labbaika ya Fatima. Labbaika ya Mahdi. That's me in Karbala. There's some people know. Karbala, this happened, it was in New York, sorry. It was in New York. They were having the Julus. Somebody wanted to put up a sign in the march, the Julus, that said, down with ISIS. Some of our sisters came over, don't say anything about ISIS. It's just Zikr Hussein. No connection between anything, right? You know, the majlis is just Imam Hussein. Remember Imam Hussein? Don't connect the dots. Don't make realists. Don't make it sound real. I just want Zikr Hussein. And one time, in another majlis, another on Mars, I was there on Mars. So I was giving the lecture. So I tried to connect between the Majlis of Imam Hussein and at that time it was the battle in Palestine. The brother came, no. Don't connect the Muslim now with the Muslim. No, Islam, I don't want any kind of connection with Islam. Islam is a fantasy. Fake Islam. I don't want to connect the dots. I don't want any personal responsibility. Right? The same way like Jesus Christ died for your sins. Imam Hussein died for my sins. I'm going to paradise. Right? That kind of Islam, that kind of crazy Islam. Okay? So for us, we're not talking about that. What's the connection between these actions that I'm going to perform and the return of the Imam of the time? Now, one of the things that we have a responsibility for and that I'd like to share a little bit about tonight is the idea of how we lead our families, brothers and sisters. We don't want to think that me having lectures, even good lectures, let's say we have lectures, alhamdulillah, at least they're in English, for instance, or they're in Urdu, but they're practical. Is that enough? Having lectures. Is having a Sunday school, is that enough? Will that mean that I'm creating the soldiers of the Mahdi? Is that enough? No. What has to happen if I want to see that my... You know that there's generations. I mean, I go to other communities too. There's generations of youth who are Shia by name, even Sada, Sayyids, by name. No connection with God at all. It was Ashura, the day of Ashura. Two brothers are standing outside the majlis, right? They don't come in attend. They're outside the majlis. So one of them was like, let's not smoke weed today. It's Ashura. The other guy's, no, who cares? It's sad, but I mean, I could tell you fake Islam, but really? Right? So what happens? How is it that a father and a mother will come from overseas, come here to America, complete their education, or start working. Start off poor, suffering, establish themselves, move to the suburbs, buy a big house, nice cars, kids have everything. The kids inside, zero Islam. But I have a center, but there's speakers. The question, how much is Islam being practiced in your personal life? You want to hear another sad story? Sometimes people come over to you. Shaykh, this happened, is really embarrassing when it happens. You get invited to the person's house. Their son or daughter is there. With me, usually the son. When the son is there, then now the father in front of the sheikh. So the guy doesn't even know me yet. He might not even come to the majlis. He didn't know me personally, and then you come over. Shaykh, can you tell my son to make salah in front of me? You can see the guy's face just crumbling. I don't even know the guy. He doesn't remember. I don't know. He doesn't know me. And the first thing you say, Shaykh, do you just reveal all of my secrets? Or other people call you. They'll be like, Shaykh, can you tell my children that how important it is to respect their parents? Right? Because with some communities, that's a big deal. Are you dutiful to the parents? You get good grades in school and dutiful? That's it. Alhamdulillah. Oh, salat, fasting. Have I even chosen this? Are you dutiful? Yeah, dutiful. Alhamdulillah. So what happens is, in some of these communities, when that happens, if you look in the life of that person, that parent themselves. Now, I'm not saying this is an excuse for anybody. This isn't an excuse. But the kid, what happens to that kid? I'm seeing, from a practical point of view, that daddy or mommy, you choose what part of Islam you like. You like azadari. You like chai, you like matam, you like niyaz. There's other parts of Islam, let's say hijab. You don't really like that much. Hijab comes off. So then now what you've done is you pick the parts of Islam that you like. Now you're like, Islam says be dutiful. But I see in your person, you haven't submitted to God. You don't submit to God. So in order for us to get the next generation, we have to, as parents, submit to God. So now, how does that connect? What I want to do is give ourselves some reminders. If we want to go over, we want to make sure that the imam comes. We need to give ourselves some reminders about how we're supposed to lead our families by example. How we're supposed to lead our families by example. One of them is this whole issue of marriage. Right? There are people who, they went out of marriage. Right? There's some people, you talk about it, people are terrified because they've seen what's happened. I remember hearing a story once, they said this couple, they walked into a bank. They walk into a bank, and it happens that a masked man comes in, he starts robbing the bank. When he comes in, he starts robbing the bank. In the middle of the robbery, his mask drops off. He starts quickly grabbing the mask, he says, "Nobody look at me!" And he gets the mask. He said, "Did anybody look?" One of the bank tellers, he looked up. The mask, he saw him and he shot him. He said, "Did anybody else look?" So the man was looking down. He said, "I didn't look, but I think my wife got a glimpse." People went out of marriage. How can we make it that people enjoy marriages? Marital bliss. Some people, they said that married men don't live longer. It just seems like that. But Islamically, that's not supposed to be the way that it is. We're supposed to be enjoying our lives. Why marriage, though? Because that's a way for us to get Islam to the next generation, to get the imam to return. So, one of the things that we have to do to keep ourselves on the right track is the idea of continuing to refine ourselves and our souls after marriage. Sisters, I can't see you guys, so you can say this openly and loudly, okay? Sisters, are your husbands Imam Ali? And one sister spoke up. Her husband isn't Imam Ali. Everybody else? No, alhamdulillah, they're married to Imam Ali. Are they married to Imam Ali? No. Okay. Brothers, You can do that. The sisters can't see you. Okay, so if you answer this question truthfully, nobody will see you. I'm the criminal. They can't see you. Are your wives the Lady Fatima? They're not. They're regular people. When you marry a regular person, brothers and sisters, a regular person has flaws. Don't let anybody tell you opposite, that if you get married, unless you meet your soulmate. No, everybody who's out there has flaws. Anybody who wants to succeed and have a successful marriage, they want to lead their family towards the Mahdi, they have to be able to deal with the idea that I'm marrying a flawed person. I'm marrying a flawed person. How do I deal with a flawed person? The Imam gives us the answer. He says, blessed is he who's distracted from the flaws of others by his own flaws. Those people who are working on themselves, who are trying to reform their character, they're going to find it easier to put up with the flaws of their spouse, right? So we can survive them. Now, next one, the idea of love in marriage. In Islam, the more love that there is between husband and wife, the better. You know what happens in some marriages? People love starve their spouses. There's some people, they're so stingy when it comes to saying love. Now, let's see for us fathers who are here. Inshallah, you guys are all, because you all are soldiers of Imam Mahdi. You're not afraid. You do whatever Islam says, right? You know what it says in Islam? I remember my brother and I heard this, and we started running away from each other. Right? And I'll tell you why. In Islam, if you love somebody, you're supposed to tell them you love them. If you love somebody, you love another mu'min, I love you, I care about you. Right? So my little brother is a tough guy. Right? And we read this hadith. And it says, if you love the person, you tell them. So I look at him, he looks at me, I'm about to step in my apartment. I say, I love you, and I run in the apartment, I love you. Right? It's so difficult. Okay? Now, back to us. As fathers, do we tell our sons we love them? I'm talking about when our sons get older. Not when they're little kids, right? Expressing love for our children. The way that Islam wants it to be. I openly tell my kids how much I love them. I care about them. I appreciate them. I miss them. Love storming my family is not the right way. Or sometimes husband and wife. Some people aren't really willing to be romantic. They're not willing to give compliments. They said there was this old lady. She's standing in front of the mirror. Her husband is next to her. She's standing in front of the mirror. When she was standing in front of the mirror, she said that when I look in the mirror, I see an old woman. I'm not in shape. Hair is gray. Maybe I have dentures. Why don't you tell me something that helps me feel good about myself? And her husband thought about it, and he said very quietly, your eyesight's very good. Sometimes they don't know how to give compliments. Don't know how to appreciate people. Right? But in order to keep a marriage going, these things are important. So, back to our Islamic principles. Another one that is a little different here with us Muslims, and it's different to the West, right? You know when it really becomes challenging? When your Islamic principles differ from the West. When what you're saying is not politically correct. It's easier when what you're saying is what everybody else is saying, but when what you're saying is different from everybody else, and that's what it takes to be a soldier of the Imam right now, to pray proudly and bravely and defiantly say what Islam is, not what Islam isn't. One of the areas that we differ is that we believe that men are supposed to be in charge of their households. The West has emasculated men, right? But we still believe that the father is supposed to be in charge of his household. In charge of his house, respected by his family. That's still the way that we do it. So for us, we want to make sure that we're doing those things, that we're doing and practicing what Islam has said to do. Not like, again, I heard this one story. They said that there was this lady and husband. They were famous in their town for having a happy marriage. It's been 50 years, they've been married. They said, what's your secret? The husband says, well, it starts with when we first got married. He said, when we first got married, we went to the Grand Canyon. We went to the Grand Canyon. We're going down to the Grand Canyon. We're riding on a couple of mules, and my wife's mule stumbled. She said, that's once. So we went a little further. The mule stumbled again. She said, That's twice. Went a little further. The mule stumbled again. My wife took out her revolver and she shot the mule in the head. And I was like, my God, animal rights. I don't. She said, that's once. Right? So we don't want to be like that. That the wife actually is running. No, the Islamic way to be. Remember, there's a reason, there's a way how God will make this work. Our sisters also don't need to be afraid or to think that this is something I can't explain to non-Muslims. They're suffering also because their families are falling apart. What is Islam's solution in this regard? What we say is this, that naturally there's a balance between men and women. What's the balance? The man is bigger, he's stronger, he has, and from an Islamic point of view, it's his responsibility to provide. What defense has God given women, for lack of better words? Your husband naturally wants to please you. Naturally. If a woman is feminine, naturally the husband, you know what some counselors explain? They say if you really want to be cruel to your husband, never be happy. No matter what he does, never be happy. Men are so desperate for their wife's affection and care. So what happens? What's the Islamic way of doing it? What they say is that still, the man should be the head of the house. He should be in charge, the final decision. It doesn't mean micromanaging as a husband. It doesn't mean micromanaging. But those major decisions can affect the direction of the family that's his to make. So what is the wife supposed to do? She's supposed to express her opinion, be vibrant, say, I think we should do this way, but be feminine. It's your decision in the end, so not a doormat. But Islam has said, never speak up, never talk, disappear. No, she expresses her opinion, but she says, look, it's your decision. You're the leader. You're the head of the household. By being feminine, the men run after their wives. They want to make them happy. Everybody gets what they want. So, now, we are running out of time, so I just want to go. There's other things, obviously, to say, but I want to go somewhere else now. The idea of how does this affect the elections, and then after that, the Messiah of the Lady Fatima. There's one thing that we want to keep in mind. One of our principles as followers of the Ahlul Bayt, and this is something we can explain to the rest of mankind. What do we say? We say that opposite to what other people say. Other people will say these kind of things. That power corrupts, absolute power corrupts, absolutely. We have a system of checks and balances to keep people from losing their way, right? As if that works. Anyhow, what do we say? That actually, if you have power in the hands of the righteous, when the Imam returns, power is in the hand of the righteous, actually that will make this world the best place on earth. When somebody, the laws are from God, the implementation is because of fear of God, it's in service of the people, this is actually the best thing you could have. We believe in the return of Jesus, praying behind the Mahdi. So what we believe is that. What happens now is, and what we say the disease that man is suffering from is that power is in the hands of those who don't fear God. Non-righteous people have this power over society. Whether it's Trump or Clinton or Sanders or Mr. Obama or Putin or any of the other Tawariq. It's not in the hands of Ahlul Bayt or someone who's been given permission from Ahlul Bayt. That's the cause of all problems. So now, for me as a Shia, how does this apply to me as a Shia? First of all, as followers of Ahlul Bayt, as people are waiting for the Imam of the time, when it comes to an issue like voting, I have to get permission from my marja. It's not an automatic yes. That, yeah, who are you voting for? Well, do I have permission to vote? To get permission from my marja. Secondly, once I look and see if I get permission from the marja, how, if my marja gets permission, under what circumstances? How is voting in the American system going to be something that serves my interest? Okay? Not those naive Muslims, because remember, right now, like they just had the elections in Canada when they had scared the Muslims with Harper, and the Muslims went and voted for Trudeau. Right? Muslims, hijabs over there,
right?
They love that. How is it in your interest as a believer? How is this making the imam return? If it's allowed, and under what conditions is it allowed? Now, question. This is something you can also explain to the American public. In America, is it a direct vote for the president? Or are you voting for those who have the right to select the president? When after that, by law, the House of Electors, are they, by law, do they have to vote the way you vote? How does the American system work? What happens if somebody wins a majority of one state? Is it even the case, how many times in history has it happened that the person with the popular vote lost? What is a superdelegate? I mean, let me say, somebody like me, I don't have time to go over and read about these things. There's videos on YouTube I can go over and read. How does the system work here? Now, the point that goes back to this is, many Muslims are operating out of a point of weakness. They don't feel they belong here. There are some Muslims who vote or feel an obligation to vote because they don't feel they belong. They almost feel civilized by voting. I'm doing my civic duty. The Americans who are here, they don't feel the same way because they belong. All right, let me tell you guys a story. They said that once there were these two little boys and their mom was making them some pancakes. So the two little boys, they started fighting over who was going to get the first pancake. The mom said, this is time for me to teach them a moral lesson. She said that, boys, you know what Jesus would say if he was here? Jesus would say, I give my brother the first pancake. So Jack turned to Ryan. He said, Ryan, you be Jesus. Some people need to say that Muslims, they really don't feel they belong. They can't say, you be Jesus. I'm the here, I pay taxes. They feel so much pressure from Islamophobia. I'm trying to fit in. No, I belong here. I'm from here. You're not throwing me out. Nothing's going to happen. Muslim weak. So we operating from a place of weakness doesn't help the imam. Now, back to our story with the Lady Fatima. As-salamu alayki, ayyatuha siddiqatu shaheeda. As-salamu alayki, ayyatuha al-mazlumatu al-maghsuba. As-salamu alayki, ayyatuha al-muttaharatu al-maqhura. As-salamu alayki, ya Fatima, binta Rasulullah. It's not even easy for us to understand the greatness of the Lady Fatima because we're so far removed from these haqqaiq and these realities. We can't even be compared to her. I said, why was Fatima to Zahra called Zahra? He responded, لِأَنَّ اللَّهَ عَزَّ وَجَلْ خَلَقَهَا مِن نُورِ عَظَمَتِهَا. She was named Zahra because Allah created her from the light of His majesty. The Holy Prophet would explain her station and her merit with Allah to the Muslims at that time. Kharaja Rasulullah, the Prophet came out, he was holding the hand of Fatima. He said, Man arafa hadhihi faqad arafaha, wa man lam ya'rifha fahiya Fatima. Whoever knows this woman, then he knows her, and whoever doesn't, then this is Fatima, the daughter of Muhammad. She is a piece of my flesh, she is my heart, which is between my two sides. فَمَنْ أَذَاهَا فَقَدْ أَذَانِي. Whoever aggravates her has aggravated me. Well, whoever aggravates me has aggravated God. The Prophet would show this, practically speaking, how people should have respect to Fatima. Whenever Fatima would come into his presence, he would welcome her. He would take her hand. The Prophet of God would stand up and walk towards Fatima. He would make Fatima sit in his place. So naturally, when the Prophet did that, the stances and the words of the Lady Fatima carried a lot of weight with the believers. But unfortunately, they didn't respect the Lady Fatima. Fatima, she did what she had to in order to support the wali of her time. One of the things that she did, she went and she was a mujahida fi sabilillah. She went at night with Ali. When he was going to get his right back, he put Fatima on a donkey. He took Hassan and Hussein with him. And he went to all of the houses of the believers who were there in Badr. How many of us would be able to answer that call? He went to their houses
And he told them about his right. And he said, now I want you to come. But how do you come? He said, come with your head shaved, ready to do bay'ah, to fight to the death. Now you have to walk away from everything. Your life, your business, everything. Walk away from it. Only four people came. After that, the Lady Fatima did another important step. She gathered the opposition in her house. The authorities got word that they had gathered in the house of Fatima. They gathered outside the house of Fatima. They threatened them. They said, you must come out and you must make bay'ah. They refused. They said, we're going to burn the house down. Fatima said, you're going to burn the house down with me in it? They said, even if Fatima is in it. They brought the fire to the door and they started to burn the house. And then the Lady Fatima tells what happens next. She said, they kicked in the door. When they kicked in the door on me, she said that I lost my baby at that time. She said, he slapped me so hard, the earring came from my ear. But that wasn't enough. After that, they came for Ali. Ali, his responsibility was to sit unless the people wanted them. So Ali didn't do anything. Ali was on the road. They came in to get him. They said, فَحَالَتْ فَاطِمَ بَيْنَهُمْ وَبَيْنَ بَعْلِهَا. Fatima tried to stand between these men who were there to attack Ali and between Ali himself. The instructions of that tyrant were to beat Fatima. He told Qunfuth to take the whip, and he started to beat Fatima on her back, on her sides, till Fatima, she's holding on to Ali, trying to keep Ali from going, till finally Fatima's hands are separated from Ali, and they drag Ali to the masjid. Allah la'natullah ala al-qawm al-zalimeen, wa say'alamu al-lazina zalamu ayyamun qalibin yanqalibun.
ساری دنیا میں روشنی ہے مگر قبر زہرا پہ تو اندھیرا ہے ساری دنیا میں روشنی ہے مگر قبر زہرا پہ تو اندھیرا ہے اتنی صدیوں کے بعد بھی لوگوں ظلم یہ فاطمہ پہ کیسا ہے ساری دنیا میں روشنی ہے مگر قبر زہرا پہ تو اندھیرا ہے ساری دنیا میں روشنی ہے مگر قبر زہرا پہ تو ساری دنیا میں روشنی ہے مگر قبر زہرا پہ تو اندھیرا ہے اتنی صدیوں کے بعد بھی لوگوں ظلم یہ فاطمہ پہ کیسا ہے ساری دنیا میں روشنی ہے مگر قبر زہرا پہ تو ہے ساری دنیا میں روشنی ہے مگر قبر کچھ ہی دوری پہ ہے عزاداروں قبر زہرا